Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It took a little longer than we all thought, but finally the first touchdown of the year for Travis Kelce. We're going to talk plenty about him throughout the show today. He was fantastic yesterday. More vintage versus Raider Travis Kelce. He typically owns them, and that's exactly what he did out in Vegas. Good morning. Hope everybody's feeling good on a victory Monday in Kansas City. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Before we get to the 7-0 star, I must say, I just want to thank again, I'm sure Cody would like to as well, everybody that did make it their way out to Vegas. It was awesome meeting some of you guys, some for the first time, some other people we've come to know a little bit over the years doing some events out in Vegas at Circa. We had a really good time throughout the entire weekend and certainly capped off by our happy hour event there on Friday night. And congrats to Mark, one of our listeners. He got hooked up with some tickets to the game and everything.
A ride to the game.
Somebody else got hooked up with the day bed and $500 food and beverage credit. So it was worth going, man. It was worth going to the party for those of you that got entered to win. Plus, you just got a free drink. So thanks so much to everybody that made it out. And I guess we'll have to do it again next year. Oh, darn.
Do you think we're invited back? Do we embarrass ourselves too much?
Oh, no. No, no. We're good.
I think we're fair. There's still some stuff that happened between...
We'll discuss.
Friday at 2.
Yeah.
And Sunday when we left, they probably need to come up on this show.
I figured.
We talked about Thursday and Friday, but God, stuff got interesting too after, you know?
Did it?
Always. Always
I'm
interesting.
I'm intrigued.
I personally had a great time. I think Alex had a great time on the trip.
Great time.
Everyone had a great time.
We
good
did.
Trip.
It was a really good trip.
Good trip.
It was a good trip. Good to be back, though, honestly, in Kansas City. I will try to avoid the energy drink. That's my goal. No energy drink yet. I'm trying to avoid the energy drink.
Why not just get through the show?
I'm not a big energy drink person.
I know, but it's a sustainability little thing today, you know?
Yeah, we'll see. Look, 1 o'clock hour, I might have to change it up or whatever. Some of you listening might have been on the flight. The flight landed back in KC at 3:45 in the morning. Pack full of Chiefs fans. There's also a story I got to get to about that flight.
Oh, really?
In about 20 minutes. Yeah. It was very awkward. I witnessed it. It wasn't involving me directly.
You didn't have any part to do with it.
Witness the awkwardness. Okay. And look, maybe the people involved are listeners. I know there were some listeners for a fact on the flight, but we'll get to that in a bit. But let's talk about what actually happened out at Arrowhead West, because it was a sensational environment. And I hadn't been to that many road games. You and I have covered neutral site Super Bowls before. I've been to a Ravens Chiefs game on the road before. So I don't have the, you know, 100 plus games of covering a Chiefs team on the road or something like a Nate Taylor or somebody like that. But it was every bit of 70-30, man. I've never seen so much red just take over a stadium. Yeah, you were watching on TV. Like, did it come across that way on TV as well? Because, man, it was insane. The parking lot was full of Chiefs fans tailgating as much as they tailgate in Vegas. You know, it's obviously a different degree. But the people that were tailgating were all Chiefs fans. I mean, it just must have been amazing if you're not only fans, but if you're Clark Hunt and you're watching and you're at the game and you're seeing that your fan base has just taken over your opponent's stadium. I know that the Steelers fans did something similar a few weeks ago out there, but I've never seen anything like that. A home game for the Kansas City Chiefs.
They had the home team had multiple false start penalties called against them. The team in their own building had to go to a silent count at one point, Gold. So, yes, it was and of course they lost, and they did it in embarrassing fashion. There was like 35 seconds where the Raiders had a glimmer of hope, and then what happened? They lost yardage on 3 consecutive plays and then failed to convert on 4th down for the single biggest drive on defense the entire year. The massive goal line stand from Spags and company. One of the single biggest moments of the year, but certainly on defense, they had a chance. The door got cracked open. And look, I told you last two interceptions, or the interceptions last week, I kind of excused away from Holmes. That one's more on him. You cannot stand back there in the back of the end zone that long, typically, okay? Ball's got to get out a little bit sooner than that. I understand he's kind of unlucky to have his arm tipped, and that,
was frustrated. He let the frustration from the play or two before that and where things were starting to trend lead to that. But you said it. I mean, that not only in-game.
He's trying to uncork that ball.
But that defensive swing and the reason why we're sitting here with this football team being 7-0, I think that goal line stand is so fitting for this entire season. Now, we haven't seen a stand like that where the Raiders end up getting -5 yards and Antonio Pierce still can't figure out when to be aggressive and when not to be aggressive as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, and it came back to get him again. And ultimately, then the Raiders raided and the Chiefs comfortably won this football game. But that was a huge pivot point for that game. If not, who knows? Maybe we're talking about the Chiefs having to have a late drive and Butker needing a field goal late in the game instead of this being a pretty comfortable win when it was all said and done out there in Vegas. But the defensive stand like that, we've seen them come up with big time plays. You know, prior to that, the other one that would come to mind would be the Falcons game, right? Where Nick Bolton on the fourth down just came right through the line of scrimmage and shut down Bijan Robinson on that play. That was the one prior to this where I was like, okay, they've made a stop like that. But to get backed up inside your own five and have four straight plays where they go backwards 5 yards was as impressive as it gets. But you don't expect that, but you expect this defense now to come up with the big stops. Like nothing, this defense can be put in bad spot after bad spot.
Doesn't matter.
And it doesn't matter, man. And they were shorthanded, or maybe it's the reality now, but the secondary was dealing with no Jalen Watson. We already knew that, but then they also had Najee Johnson had a concussion yesterday. And so Roland Wallace and Josh Williams, who had a rough go at times yesterday, like they were still trying to piecemeal that thing together a little bit in the secondary. And yet it didn't matter because the mainstays stepped up.
Well, the problem is they're the number one run defense in the NFL. So getting down into those spots where you're near the line of scrimmage, the reason why the Chiefs keep winning is because Chris Jones and Turk Wharton combined on an interior defensive line is ruining anyone's plan to try to get a yard, 2 yards, 3 yards down there. And if you go back through, because this is the whole thing, the most recent one I saw, Mike Greenberg this morning, we've talked about this. People aren't going to talk about the Chiefs right now because they're not interesting to them. They need teams who are bad. The interesting teams are the Cowboys stink, the Jets. Bengals stink, the Jets stink. They want to talk more about these teams who have failed and come up empty than they do the Chiefs, who have continued to win during that stretch. But the truth is that because of the way they play run defense, Mike Greenberg was more saying Derrick Henry should be the MVP. I'm like, I don't think so. I mean, he's been great. He's done really well this season. He's won a lot of games for Baltimore, helped them win a lot of games. Do I fear Derrick Henry in a playoff game? If you're Kansas City, hell no. They got the best run defense in the NFL. This has stood out all season long, obviously, because of how good they've been defensively. But yesterday was, I don't know, like their piece de resistance. It's like, I understand Gardner Minshew got him, bullied him a couple of times. You know, like, oh, he got the opening drive touchdown, like happened earlier in the season.
He was 8 for 8 out of the gate.
Yeah. Okay, kudos, right? When you had to get 1 yard, you lost 5 over 3 plays. The Chiefs got the turnovers. They sacked Gardner Minshew 5 times. Like, he beat the blitz a couple times. You know, he did a nice job. A couple times, he made some good throws up against the blitz. And they still only got to 20, which was a garbage time touchdown with like 2 minutes to play, Chiefs were practically playing prevent.
Yeah, they made that essentially exactly. I mean, they were way off in that moment as well. I mean, it's oversimplifying sometimes, but we saw exactly why the Chiefs are a team that's trending to win another Super Bowl, and we saw why the Raiders are the Raiders, right? And an organization that is going to have a top 5 draft pick in all reality at the end of this season, and who knows what their future holds. An organization that has struggled time and time again. And yesterday, even in those moments where they did have a chance to make things really interesting, the Raiders still are always going to Raider. And in that building, the Chiefs have owned them. They have dominated them. That building has been very, very friendly to the Kansas City Chiefs. And we know that the Raiders haven't won anything in that building. And when there was all the discussion that we had last week about the last time the Raiders played, and of course, won on Christmas Day, all of that, you know, the Chiefs were complete opposite. They were sharp from the get-go in this game. They were not flat or anything like we saw in the Christmas Day game. All of that did not come back up or anything. The Raiders, to their credit, for the first drive or so, they were sharp. And then after that, Kansas City settled in defensively. It's the stat is the same old story with this defense. I mean, it's amazing.
I do not how care if they start poor.
The first 15 plays on defense, yeah, you might get them. First 15 plays, you might get them. You're going to move the ball. You better hope you score, though. But you're going to move the ball. After that, Chiefs are going to settle in. They're going to adjust. It's what Spags does every single game. And then you better be ready to adjust after that. If not, you're going to really struggle to score. And that's what it is. I think it was Matt McMullen maybe put out the stat. What, 27 straight now? Games yep. holding opponents 20 or less.
Which is the longest streak since the Ravens in the early 2000s. So, yes, it stands out as being one of the single greatest performances we've seen, certainly. But also, like, it's not just it's who they choose to stop. I know some of this is because the Chiefs were essentially just having like 19 and 13 play drives and moving the ball with what I would call ruthless efficiency for huge chunks of the game, where they've always, all season, no matter the scoring or whatever, they can move the football. A sign of a good offense, by the way. They can move the ball from the 20 to the 20. Every game, all year long. Their question has always been, and will continue to be at this point.
They've been
better.
The last two games combined, actually not a problem in the red zone.
So they're now ninth in the NFL in scoring, which is higher than they were a couple of weeks ago when they were 14th or 15th. So they've climbed up back to respectability, at least on that end, for at least what we're used to in the Chiefs. But it's who they choose to shut down. Brock Bowers looked every bit of like a star. That back shoulder pass where he got a very tough contested catch against Trent McDuffie. McDuffie himself being on Brock Bowers speaks to the level of weapon that they think that he is. He looked like he was in for another 8-catch, 100-yard game, just like he's done to
as advertised.
Five teams this year. He didn't make a catch for 2.5 quarters. He went 10-minute mark of the second quarter and did not make another grab until that garbage time drive in the fourth quarter with less than 3 minutes. They took a man away for 2.5 quarters. Like, Spags got into the old means. Like, oh, okay, cool. I see what he does now. Got it. Like, got it. No problems. And then just moved on.
Yeah, they have no other weapons on offense, you know. So when you're able to key in on him, and we already acknowledge the rushing defense for this football team. Yeah, Brock Bowers was really impressive just early on in that game because Trent McDuffie was right on him, as you pointed out, and it didn't matter. He still made a catch. Brock Bowers, long-term, if they, you know, stuff more long-term future problems, you know, if they ever get a quarterback kind of stuff, you know, he could be a problem for a decade or something, but it's the Raiders. They don't have the right head coach. They don't have the quarterback. There's so many things. They're so far away from being a real problem in this division.
Just get yards for now with nothing else to go with.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh no. That was, in my opinion, though, even though I was critical of the end zone interception because I thought he just held on the ball too long. Can't usually throw the ball 50, and it looked like he was wrenching up to throw that ball 50 yards down the field. Can't usually do that from deep back inside your own end zone, especially because the two holding penalties are what got you all the way pinned back anyway. Outside of, I would say, just that one play, single best performance of the season from Patrick Mahomes. That is the best he has looked all year. He was doing classic Mahomes stuff, running for some first downs. They kept biting on the run. So, like, clearly part of their coaching strategy was don't let him run for the first down. So the first, like, three, he dumped the pass over the top to Samaje Perine, hit Noah Gray on one where it's just like, oh, you think I'm going to run? Oh, well, I'll just flip it over there. It was the best he's looked all season. Great on the opening drive, sustained every drive, got the ball in the end zone. Like, this is 2 weeks in a row where I thought Patrick Mahomes looked really good. I know the stat line is going to say he's thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. I don't care.
It's the same thing we did say, that if you actually watch these games, in particular the last 2 weeks, you can notice the truly game-winning plays that he's able to make. And this game, it was a third down plays, and a lot of times, it was with his feet. I think there's also some truth to the fact that he's running more now, and the stuff that happened on the sideline last week and some of the discussion around that, and you know, players being worried to get a penalty. In a weird way, that's also helping him in the passing game now because defenders are more worried about Mahomes' leg. There's all of it ends up helping you, but it was Houdini stuff at times again from Patrick Mahomes that we have seen time and time again throughout his career. And then we know he ended up hurting his ankle at one point and was ultimately able to come back and didn't miss any time or anything like that. And I'm sure it'll be something that is sore for him this week or something, but
he's got an extra
that's
day.
That's part of his game right now. It's back. I think we've all seen in the playoffs go through this run when Mahomes is at his best, he's also doing it with his feet. As much as we all know what the arm is and everything and the decision making there, but when he's at his best and they've gone on these runs, it's because he's had the third and nine and he's able to move out of the pocket. And somehow, like, he has no business getting the first down, but somehow he does, you know, making the defender take a bad angle, whatever it may be. We've all had the jokes about, you know, how fast he is or whatever. But, like, when he wants and needs a third and eight with his legs, he ends up looking like one of the fastest guys on the field, just magically. It's insane. He knows how to take the right angle, man. And it's been beneficial here recently in the passing game now, too, because they're honoring the legs again.
Yeah, they're back to just jumping ahead because they realize, uh-oh, we're in trouble, right? How do we combat this end of it? I went to go look because I was like, I wonder if where the Lamar Mahomes MVP conversation is.
After
now,
Lamar's
of course,
that
Lamar's
yesterday.
Team lost to a 1-5 or 1-6, whatever the hell they were. A miserable point, I guess, I'm making. Mm-hmm. Browns team, who are now better, of course, because Deshaun Watson's not their quarterback. They're the funniest team in the league. For two straight years, you could have put, and I'm not even kidding, literally any other quarterback who starts for an NFL team or is a backup for an NFL team, and they're better. Like, Case Keenum could come out of retirement, and somehow the Browns would be a better football team than led with Deshaun Watson. And because he's such a terrible person, it brings me joy. Okay? It makes me laugh to watch the Browns immediately become more dangerous, even though Kansas City does have to play them in a few more weeks. And that game got tougher, obviously, because they have to face Jameis Winston. Right now, Lamar is still the favorite, though, to win the MVP at most books. You know, the odds vary a little bit. He's, let's do FanDuel. You know, you sponsor him. Plus 350. Josh Allen's plus 300 there, so he's actually the favorite at all the other books. Josh Allen, or Lamar Jackson's the favorite, and then Mahomes is third. He's still third. Jared Goff fourth. Jared Goff is still the best value in all of this. His team keeps 50 winning.
50-plus against the Titans yesterday. Jared that Goff game was 14-14 at one point. They won 50-something.
At one point, they had 21 or 28 points, and Jared Goff had like 19 passing yards. He had nothing to do with it.
They were at 42-14, and he had 28. He ended up with 85 passing yards and three touchdowns.
They scored 50 points. He had 80.
Jeez. Yeah, that offense is something else. I mean, a lot of things have to happen. We were talking about this last year with the Lions, but offensively, like, if we a Chiefs Lions Super Bowl would be pretty ridiculous.
I would say the
Chiefs defense with that offense on the other side, plus still the ability of Mahomes, and the Lions haven't been in a Super Bowl.
Aiden Hutchinson would return. Remember, they said maybe late in the season. Didn't they say that with Aiden?
I think
first got hurt, it was like he could be available to them if they made the Super Bowl. I think it was like the initial line right after the Super Bowl.
Okay. Yeah.
So like in the few weeks leading up to that, I'd be like, where's Aiden Hutchinson? How's he recovering? Is it coming close?
It would be probably 70-30 Lions fans or something in the Super Bowl for that one.
It'd be a lot like the Eagles one, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like what we just saw in Vegas yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the case. You're right. The Eagles one in particular, where the Chiefs got outnumbered. That's true.
Mahomes has still got a good chance to win the MVP because by the end of the year, I think the stats will even up. There'll be a lot more touchdowns and interceptions the rest of the way. The fact that he went two straight weeks without a passing touchdown is so uncommon for him. The other part about this is obviously part of the reason it's working, right? Is that on the opening drive where they go and score a touchdown, who are the featured players? Travis Kelce, DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think that's an accident. They ran the ball well, and then they threw the ball to Travis Kelce and DeAndre Hopkins. The only two people who should regularly get the ball. The other guys, right, you find ways to work them in or manage the side of it. But, I mean, that's who you want to throw the football to.
You should be even more excited about DeAndre Hopkins. We're going to talk about him in 12 minutes or so. Even though it was two catches, nothing crazy on the stat line, but, boy, the one catch in particular that he had right before halftime, that's a catch that they don't have anybody else in the receiver room that can make that catch.
Nope.
Best hands on the team. We saw why that's been his story that's followed him throughout his career. Like, everybody's acknowledged that, whether it was in Houston or Arizona, Tennessee, and now in Kansas City. Like, that was a big-time catch. Like, yeah, you look at the box score, and you're like, okay, yeah, big deal, guys. He had two catches for, like, 29 yards. Now, that one catch was massive in the moment. Both of them, actually, on third down conversion. What was a third down conversion? And just that kind of catch, it's been a long time since we've seen anybody be able to make a catch like that.
Outside of the 10 seconds where the Raiders had the ball at like the 3-yard line with a chance to take the lead, that game was pretty stress-free by NFL game standards. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, the Raiders never felt like a good enough team to beat the Chiefs, and they weren't a good enough team to beat the Chiefs. And I feel like we're just barreling towards, I look at the Chiefs schedule. And obviously the Broncos can, they're salty. We've talked about them before. They're an annoying team. They're not going to be easy to beat in 2 weeks before they take on Buffalo. But both teams are going to be favored by 4 or 5, Buffalo and Kansas City. And we're going to be talking about a game in which they're heading to Buffalo, where Buffalo has 2 losses and a chance to make it 1-game difference with the tiebreaker against Kansas City, where Kansas City will have a chance to essentially, in my opinion, clinch the 1 seed in the playoffs based on the way that it might go.
Yeah, if they're undefeated going to the Bills game and then they win that one just from tiebreakers and everything like that, the 1 seed conversation should be at that point over, unless you think suddenly this team is just randomly falling apart. And we've said this over and over. They're not playing great football yet. I think we've seen the last 2 weeks. We're starting to see them play a little bit better
in
multiple areas, and the defense has been very constant. So we'll get to DeAndre Hopkins some more in about 10 minutes or so. Also, a reminder, later on today, the only place you'll hear from Andy Reid is 96.5 The Fan. That's coming up at noon right here during Cody and Gold. So I mentioned this morning.
You said something weird happened on the flight?
Yeah. So, okay, we land 3:45 or so this morning. So that's important.
That's even later than the red eye we took back from the Super Bowl, isn't it?
No, the one from the Super Bowl, when you and I were on that, we left Vegas at like 12:45, we didn't land until like 5 something.
Yeah, okay.
So it was later, which I don't know. In a weird way, is that better? I don't know.
Anyway, I just didn't sleep.
So 2 things with the flight. One, I was nodding out on the flight for a brief moment, and then somebody had like a very minor medical emergency, so they made a whole announcement if there was a doctor, so that woke everybody up because they put all the lights on. Yeah. Fortunately, the individual was fine. They think maybe somebody like fell and passed out. Were they drunk? Or they asked for someone if anybody on board had like a glucose meter or whatever. So
this feels like a drunk.
So that was the first part. Yeah, that one, fortunately, the person was fine. But yes, I think the person might have been a little drunk. I don't know.
Very briefly, just as a reminder that this is how Vegas works. Mm-mm. Gold and I were Saturday. We met at a cabana where a group of people I know better than Alex were having some cocktails. You met a gentleman named Ash.
Yeah.
He's a bit much to take in.
Uh-huh.
He's loud, gregarious, mm-hmm. impossible to miss, inappropriate, all those things. Mm-hmm. He had to leave Circa Swim. He had to leave Stadium Swim in a wheelchair. He was so drunk. They wouldn't let him walk out of the building.
I'm not surprised.
So if you're curious if that can happen in Vegas.
Anyway.
The answer is yes.
Okay,
please,
so that was the minor part. That wasn't even the big thing. That was just an unfortunate thing. Unfortunately, you know, the person was fine. So then we land. Lights are on. We're at the gate at MCI. We're still on the plane. They haven't unlocked the door yet or whatever. And there's, I would say, someone to my right, she's probably anywhere from, I will say, 19 to like 23 years old. And that's important context. You'll know why in a second. So then a gentleman behind her, and he's probably in his 40s, he's with his wife or girlfriend, presumably. He goes, "Is your shorts?" to her. And at first I thought it was like a vape, but it wasn't. It was a lighter from the angle I was at. So it's a lighter. And she goes, "Oh yeah, that's mine." And he goes, and he like pulls it back. Like he pulls it back away from her.
Weird
okay?
behavior?
Yeah. And she
also,
goes,
"Can you bring a lighter on a plane?"
Well, we'll get to that. So that's the entire
oh, okay.
thing.
Got it.
And so he pulls it back and she's like, "Yeah, it's mine. Can I have it?" He's like, "No, you can't have it. You can't have this on a plane." Now, we've already landed. It's 3:45 in the morning.
He's picking this fight right now?
Yes. And so she obviously starts to get agitated. And she's like, what do you mean I can't have it? He's like, "You can't have this on a plane." So he just like, and he like pulls it back, and like holds it against his chest. Then he gets up and sets it on like the area where they serve the drinks or whatever
beverage station.
It just sets there. He doesn't quote unquote rat the person out, but just sets it there. So then of course she goes up and just goes, "Hey, can I grab this please from the stewardess or whatever?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure." And he's like, "Thank you." He wouldn't give it back to me. And she like says it super loud. That guy just stays quiet over here. So she's hot. Like she's pissed at this point in time. So finally we get off the plane. She walks in the concourse and she's like mother effing. She gets on the phone. She's telling the whole story. She's yelling the whole walk all the way back. And the guy said, he's like, I don't think you can bring a lighter on the plane. And I have no idea. I looked, you actually can, like Bic lighters. You can't have like the big butane lighters, but you can have a Bic lighter.
Okay.
So I bring this up, one, super awkward, but I'll be honest, man. If you're going to call somebody out, you better be right. And I think this guy was wrong. I think he was factually inaccurate with his take on the lighter. It's also 3:45 in the morning, dude. We already landed. What are you getting out of this? You're teaching a life lesson to a 19-year-old kid? Like,
that's what he thought.
Move on for the day, sir.
The TSA missed it. Let it go. It's not a Bowie knife. Like, what's the problem here? It was just like a Bic lighter.
That's all it was.
And they landed.
She also made it through security. Clearly wasn't a problem for the, you know, the people that were mad at TSA.
You can't have this. She's going to take down a whole plane with one Bic lighter.
Yeah.
She can't light it on the plane.
No.
But
but if you're going to call, like, if you're going to hold someone's quote unquote property, you better be damn sure you're correct. And he was wrong.
Did the fighting continue off the plane?
He wouldn't say anything. She was just mother effing. Yeah.
The fact, though, that
actually, I don't think she's in the wrong here.
No, I don't
know. I'm not blaming her. I'm saying this. I'm talking about this guy, not her.
The fact that I don't know why they felt the need to bring it up, because say it was before the flight took off. Maybe he has a little bit more of a reason to be like, hey, you can't bring this on, even though she would have made
but
it
no,
through security.
Also, mind
fine.
Your own damn business.
Correct.
But like he made it. She made it through security.
This does feel like a good life lesson for everyone. This has nothing to do with you, and stay out of it. You know, I would just say could just do that more. Everyone could do that just a little bit more in life. That's all.
Yeah, stay in your lane.
Holding it hostage, holding a Bic lighter hostage.
That's the other thing.
Oh, tough guy.
Oh, is it? By the way, he knew what were you just trying to agitate? Like, oh, is this your lighter? Yeah, it's mine. You can't have this on the next time. Just leave it on the floor then. You know what I mean? Like, what was this guy's point?
Or just don't, you don't need to say anything. You made the flight home. You're fine.
Exactly. Yeah. But like his entire intention was to, clearly he knew he was going
to
cause confrontation.
Tried to
teach if I go up to you and say, oh, is this yours? Yeah, it's mine. Oh, well, you can't have it.
Somebody said, what makes you think you can't carry a lighter in a plane? I don't know. They don't let me take more than 3 ounces of shampoo. I can't keep my shoes on when I go through a metal detector. I just assume I can't have anything. I go to the airport with as little as possible, as little as humanly possible. I don't think I could have any of that stuff on a plane. I just walk in there assuming they won't let me carry any. I can't carry water through security.
No, you're right. I was told on the flight to Vegas, I was trying to take a water bottle with me on the flight. And said, no, sir,
you need to drink whatever, 3 ounces or whatever. That's normal stupid stuff. Anyway, that was just awkward this morning. And also at 3:45 in the morning, don't be that dude. Don't be that guy. That's all I'm saying. Up next, let's talk about someone that could be that guy for this football team long term heading into the postseason. That's DeAndre Hopkins. He had a couple catches. Let's talk about that performance next. D-Hop's first snap and catch as a member of the Chiefs. Yeah, his first snap was a 3rd and 7, and of course he got the ball immediately
on the Mahomes first drive after the Raiders had taken the lead.
Mm-hmm, and Mahomes was staring him down the entire time. He was always throwing the ball to DeAndre Hopkins on that particular play. And then it was only 2 catches, as we said earlier, for D-Hop, but that catch and then the one that set up the field goal before halftime for Butker, I mean, those are big time plays that
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Other than Kelsey, they don't have anybody else that's capable of doing anything like that. But the one before half to me was the most impressive of the two, because he just went up and snared that thing right at the sideline. Smooth. You could see why, like, everybody talks about how great his hands are in the league. That was
the field goal layup.
Perfect representation of why you should be excited. It's not going to be necessarily the 60-yard touchdowns or anything. No. It's going to be the key conversions. He can make the contested catches. In this case, wasn't contested. Just was a really good route, and then catching the ball right on the sideline. Patrick Mahomes, even after the game, was like, you know, we already saw some promising signs, like why he fits this offense perfectly. And I think we all did watching that game. How can you not think, even in limited action, that he is a perfect fit? That's why they were interested in him, Cody, 2 years ago.
He's the better version of Juju Smith-Schuster. Has been his entire career. Yep. He souped up Juju Smith-Schuster every single second he's been in the league versus Juju Smith-Schuster's been in the league. What I thought about it, because I was trying to decide, like, what's the right descriptor? What would I call his, like, two catches for 29 yards? When you and I both said maybe 4 for 50 or somewhere in that range, that's just a professional wide receiver. That's what those two catches were. Those are the type of things you get from a professional wide receiver. That's not something that they've had a lot of around their team over the last couple of years. I really felt like Rashee Rice has started to develop into that before his injury, and we were seeing him turn into that, where every time you just need, like when you need 7, he gets you 8. When you need 12, he gets you 13. When you need him to catch something on the inside, he does, or on the sideline, he does. It's just professional wide receivers who, and a lot of times, I don't think comes with a bunch of flash. Neither of those were like, oh, wow. He just put his feet near the sideline, caught the ball, went out of bounds, made a field goal, got at the sticks, caught a pass, first down, right? That's what we've been, this offense has been so desperately needing. Because then we can get to Worthy later. Worthy just looks like a rookie. Worthy's got 5 touchdowns. He makes some plays happen, but he just looks like a rookie sometimes because he is, and in fairness, so. Sky Moore is like the antithesis of professional wide receiver. If you need 5, he gets you 4. If you need a catch, he drops it.
Yeah, dude's on IR, aren't even playing, still catching strays from
you. I'm just saying, like, what's he going to say?
Jeez, my goodness.
I'm trying to point out the stark difference between when you watch him. And when you watch him, you're just like, he just does every little tiny thing correct, which is nice. That's refreshing over the last couple of seasons where we've seen a lot of blunders. And that makes, how about Tony? He's not even on the roster. Him, you know, like just making mistakes. They're still a tight end heavy offense. They're still going to throw it to Kelce, throw it to Noah Gray probably the most. Noah Gray's, I mean, God, they got to give him that extension now. He looks like a vital member of the offense.
No question.
But like DeAndre Hopkins, I was very impressed, and I expect his role to grow.
Oh, big time.
He's going to get way more targets over the next 2-3 weeks.
You brought up Worthy, who I think ended up with 7 or 8 targets in the game. I don't know if you're going to ever see anything more than that for Worthy in a rookie season I'm talking about. When Hopkins has full access essentially to the playbook, which I expect to be this next game, I don't think you'll see many games where Worthy's getting 8 targets. I'm not saying that he won't have, you know, 5 targets and he'll have 1 rush or something like that. But once Hopkins has the full access to the playbook, I think it changes a little bit in terms of there were some throws that, you know, they needed. Unfortunately, there's a drop. They needed Worthy to make a catch, and he unfortunately wasn't able to. Then they had a great design. They were able, you call it a pick play if you want or whatever, but great design that sprung him open.
And
it was an easy touchdown for Xavier Worthy. But I'm definitely excited with what you see from Hopkins in this offense and what that potentially can be moving forward, just because you're right that he's a better version of Juju, but man, I don't know if they've had a guy like Hopkins in terms of the ability to make a catch. You said, oh, it's just a basic catch. Well, actually, nobody was like, wow. I don't know about, maybe I'm in the minority. I thought that catch was really impressive right before halftime, yeah. Because that's not a catch that we've seen other receivers make. How many times have we seen that play where it's a dime from Mahomes right on the sideline, but the receiver just drops it or just can't keep their feet in bounds or whatever.
Yeah, the little toe hits the white part of the tape.
Hopkins in stride is able to just snag that football, get both feet in bounds, makes it a manageable field goal for Butker.
Over on YouTube, the chat's right? It's like, that doesn't look like D-Hop has a lingering injury anymore.
No.
Must have magically become healed now that he's on a contender.
Yeah, it's amazing how that
just
works.
Just being around Patrick Mahomes heals you magically. It's like an aura.
Yeah, you get traded to a new team and suddenly all is well. All is well. Now, maybe Davante Adams in with the Jets, maybe that hamstring is going to flare up again with the way things are trending for them. My guess is the hamstring doesn't feel as good as it did 2 weeks ago when he first joined the Jets.
Oh, yeah, that one's going to tighten up real fast.
I think so.
About a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
From watching this game, obviously, for DeAndre Hopkins, you even thinking even further ahead where you think the potential to get Pacheco back, Hollywood Brown back, like what can the offense be at that point in the playoffs when you need it most? You've got the reliable guys in Hopkins and Kelce, and then you work in Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown is back, and then you get your number one running back. I mean, that would be best case scenario going into the playoffs, obviously, is to have Hollywood ready to go and have Pacheco at least healthy.
What's funny is I don't think getting Pacheco back fundamentally changes what they do. It just upgrades the spot you're asking to do it. So right now, the closing back is in, everyone's tired and we're going to wear you out. It's been Carson Steele 2 weeks in a row. They bring Carson Steele in the fourth quarter of games they're leading and let him just like run directly into you. And you're like, oh man, I'm tired. I don't want to do this. And then I still think on third downs, they'll switch to Kareem Hunt more in those when they want to give like Pacheco a break. And it'll just be like slight upgrades. It doesn't change how they operate or the way they're running their offense. It'll just give them an upgrade for when they go to the secondary.
I mean, it keeps both guys fresh, and we've discussed that. I mean, that'll be the key. Whenever the day comes that Pacheco is available again, I don't think Pacheco just goes back to having the exact same amount of touches as he did. He will still be coming back from a pretty serious injury and knowing it's all about the postseason. So I think Kareem Hunt will absolutely be a huge focus still in the backfield, even when Pacheco is available again. I don't know if it's 50-50 or exactly how the math will work out between the two.
You'll hate it for fantasy, but for a Chiefs fan, you won't care.
Yeah, who cares, right? I mean, in a three-peat campaign, to Drew's point, and we've brought this up a few times over the last few weeks, which is, there's other injuries that may or may not happen along the way, but there is still like that, you can call it pie in the sky, I don't know, a scenario where it could all come together as well by the time they get the bye in the playoffs.
Hollywood,
they could have it all come together for the divisional round if things were to go perfectly, basically.
And that's, we haven't seen what that offense would look like at all this year. We've had thoughts of what would it look like, but obviously Rasheed being out for the year is a bummer, but Hollywood would be available. You'd have Kelsey, you would have DeAndre Hopkins, like what you would want
you'd
the
have
offense
Juju.
To be. Yes, hopefully back as well. I mean, everything that you'd want the offense to be before the season started, you would get at least as much as you could out of it starting in that division.
Yeah, it's not a guarantee, but there is a scenario in which round one of the playoffs for the Chiefs after the bye, and their wide receivers, like you said, are DeAndre Hopkins, Juju Smith-Schuster, Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy. That sounds like a real wide receiver.
It could happen.
That sounds like a dangerous group. And Pacheco and Kareem Hunt is your 1-2 backs. Look, I don't know. That's pie. You're right. That is pie in the sky. But that's not off the table. All those guys. Pacheco's definitely coming back this year based on everything anyone has pretty much said about his injury. Hollywood is the much bigger unknown. And I got no idea on Juju. And now that they got DeAndre Hopkins here, what's the rush? Why rush Juju Smith-Schuster back? We saw the offense work with DeAndre Hopkins. He covers a lot of the same routes, and then everything was kind of square. Saturday night, did you get a chance to watch your Kansas Jayhawks?
I did. I was sitting at Circa. Because the Chiefs, we all know, were in town, you had plenty of people from the area. So you had a good mix of KU and K-State fans watching the game at Circa as that game was going on, and it created a pretty fun environment. You had that at the same time as the World Series game going on, as LSU A&M going on. So constantly there was cheering, and you almost had to like, it was almost overstimulating for a moment there, just based off of everything that was happening in some of these football games. But that was one. And yet again, Kansas in the fourth quarter, Cody, we've seen this all season long. They can't close the deal. Happened again. This time in Manhattan, and it's now 16 straight
season
wins for Kansas State over the Jayhawks.
First off,
16 straight.
I'm actually really happy for Kansas State because I was pretty worried that for a season that started locally where all three teams I thought had a legitimate case to be made, that they had a chance to make the college football playoff, with Kansas State and Missouri having the best chance, but both to do it. Missouri got killed by Alabama. Their backup quarterback stinks. Pine. Can't remember his name. Call him Gomer Pyle out here. Pine, he stinks. So, Brady Cook was trying to come back from the injury. We understand what happened there, but they got cooked by Alabama. So in their two biggest games so far, Missouri's lost roughly 100-0 in their two biggest games this year. And Kansas's season fell apart early with I'm sure they got like a 99% win probability in like seven straight games and keep losing them all. So for K-State to get the win, at least one local team is still alive, still has a chance. God, would that have been good enough for you? Like, as a Kansas fan, knowing where the season went, the win against K-State is like, you know what? Not bad of here. Ruined their season. So problem solved. When you're a bad team, ruining someone's season can be enough.
I think not to the full extent what you just said. Would it have been enjoyable for Kansas fans, would it have been great to ruin their season if you're a Kansas fan? Sure. Would it have been okay, good enough? No, because Kansas's initial expectation this year was to have all this momentum, and obviously with the stadium and everything going on, and to potentially get to a Big 12 title game. So no, I don't think that would have made the season. Would fans have felt really good and obviously enjoyed spoiling it? Absolutely. So I don't think it was a season maker. I mean, they still would have been a 3-win football team. But that game, it was a really good football game. But how many times have we seen, Cody, where it's just special teams mistakes? You know, the kid that caught the ball with the foot out of bounds, the one, you know, dumb mistakes, missed extra point. Like, that's, you can't win on the road against a team as good as Kansas State when you make those kind of mistakes. Somehow they still had a chance to win it after those mistakes too. But it was one of those games where I think it just makes this season even more frustrating because they've lost.
They could have won every game they've lost.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the name of the game, right? Like, you have to seal the deal. But yeah, I mean, you would think they would have got one or two of them, and they just haven't.
There's numbers that have come out. Derek Johnson on Twitter, D Johnson Radio, has said these numbers. At the peak of the probability of win percentage that Kansas had in all of their losses, the odds of them going 0-6 in those games are 1 in 50,000. So, Kansas has found a way to somehow lose all the games. The worst percentage chance to win was the Arizona State game, and that was 74% chance, and they didn't figure it out. For some reason, I don't know how they keep doing it, honestly. It's like they're almost reinventing new ways on how to lose the game.
They've been poorly coached at times, man. That's the thing.
Like, 14-0, too, with that drop touchdown.
Yep. Poor execution. Ultimately, the players have to execute, but, you know, as great of a job as Lance Leipold, of course, has done, turn around the program and all that, they have not been a well-coached team this year in so many instances. On the flip side, let's give K-State some love. You know, here's what they got. I mean, they're sitting there with BYU and Iowa State. We know they got a chance to play Iowa State coming up. They lost to BYU, but that loss looked, you know, quote unquote, better and better because of the situation. They get a layup game this week against Houston. Then Arizona State, Cincy, and then the big one that ultimately is going to decide whether they most likely get in the Big 12 title game, depending on if BYU slips up and stuff, is the K-State-Iowa State game. But the schedule softens up the next 3 weeks for Kansas State.
It sure looks like it's going to come down to that one. Based on how many wins are in there, maybe you could get away with that loss, but it would take a lot of other special circumstances. And we just know, if you're not even in the Big 12 title game, I don't know how you get to the college football playoff. There's a scenario, just based on how the SEC has been down this year a little bit, there's a scenario that two teams from the Big 12 make the college football playoff, both teams who play in the conference title game. I don't think I would rule that out, but I do think you have to get in there. Look, I think sometimes people want to, and this is like the difference between, like, if you've covered the Chiefs versus this, it'd be easy to be like, how did you let Kansas almost beat you on your home field with a team with two wins? We all know Kansas is saltier than a two-win team. For the same reasons we just mentioned, Avery Johnson, in the biggest moment of their season to date, came through big. He led them on the drive that got them the win. That's all you can ask for out of a team. And they have been the opposite of Kansas, and they found a lot of ways to win late, even in games in which they trailed. And so
just win.
Kudos. They've won. They'll give themselves a chance at the college football playoff as a result of that. So
yeah, I think it's part of the beauty of the 12 in a way, is that you can find you can call it a mulligan if you want to, but if you find ways to win games that matter in as it pertains to making your conference title game, where if you're Kansas State, it doesn't matter how you make the game. If you make the Big 12 title game, you just find a way to get there, and you're giving yourself a shot to make the college football playoff.
It's probably one of the few things we've talked as a bright side for the 12-team playoff format for the college football playoff is, style points used to matter in college football, and that's stupid. I'm sorry. That's a stupid way to operate. Oh, I'm sorry you didn't beat Florida State by 30. You only won by 14. See you in next year's college football playoff.
Yeah.
That's a terrible way to operate. Did I win the football game or did I not win the football game? I was on my home field. Kansas gave us a fight. We got the dub. Give us our shot. That's all you're asking for a lot of times in college football. And for the longest time, style points were a huge part of the way people judge and rank you, and it's because you only had four, right?
Multiple teams with very similar resumes. I mean, you have to get into the specifics of what differentiates a team, and in some cases in the past, and it still might come up this year, How did you perform? Now, I've said it. I think you agree with me, which is this year, however it shakes out, 12 teams, whoever's team 13 or team 14, I really don't want to hear you whining that you didn't get in if you're the 13th or 14th. Give me a break. Like, we got 12 spots here.
100%.
I guess 11 if you're not a group of five.
I will say this. Notre Dame, they only have one loss. Northern Illinois lost to Ball State this weekend, and they're 4-4 or 4-5, whatever the hell the record
How
is.
How the heck do they beat Notre Dame?
I made my stance. You can't lose to Northern Illinois and be in a college football playoff. Get out of here.
Notre Dame are 8th in the country.
Way too gross.
Cody, okay. Notre Dame are 8th in the country.
I know.
To me, that loss, I'm sorry, is there should be two lost teams that are ahead of Notre Dame. I know it's only one loss, but you lost at home to Northern Illinois. They stink. The losses have to mean as much as the wins do in this same situation, where depending on who you lose to, they shouldn't even be top 10.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll talk about Travis Kelce's day and a first half as good as it gets for him in 2024. And one question that Cody and I want to ask you guys and see if you think it actually happened or not in this way during the football game. So that's coming up in a little while. I didn't see this. You pointed this out, and then I went on social media. I thought it was a fake thing. I guess the Miami Heat over the weekend decided to honor a legendary player, a Hall of Famer, Dwayne
Wade. One of the
single
best players in their franchise's history,
makes
man.
Makes sense. I think it's a certainly a fitting statue in terms of that honor. The problem is the statue itself. This happens, I feel like, once a year with any sport worldwide. An organization will try to honor an athlete's performance or whatever, and they botch the heck out of the actual statue, usually the face in particular. And that's what it wasn't quite Ronaldo bad. It wasn't Ronaldo bad, but it was close.
Looked like Lawrence Fishburne, dude.
I give more and more credit to the Pro Football Hall of Fame for how well they do with the busts that they put together that are usually spot on when I see this. If you Google Dwayne Wade statue, you'll see the not controversy, but just more of the jokes that are being made.
Should you just recast it?
Yes, of course.
Should you just make a new one? Like, you can't get dunked on like that. Even Dwayne Wade in the moment looked like he was like, oof.
He looked uncomfortable a little bit.
He hadn't seen it. He hadn't seen it before. You know, it's a surprise. And it's like,
what happened? Is that his face they molded? Was someone trying to craft it from memory?
It's like Voldemort or whatever from Harry Potter.
Dude, I like what they tried to do, but they didn't execute it very well. And I understand it might be hard to do, but they need to make it easy.
This is why you can't do the action shot of the face.
Yes.
Like, if the statue is going to be Jordan, like, with his leg split doing a dunk, fine. Leave the face out of this, because I don't know if you guys seen, there was a social media trend maybe 6 months ago. Like, people will be on a date at Home Gold, and they would, like, take turns painting each other, right? And imagine how terrible job you do, like,
painting the group. Hold on, I must not have been listening. Let me explain that. You said they're taking turns painting each other?
Well, like, taking a,
excuse me, that's all I heard.
Painting a portrait at the same time of each other's face, right?
Got you.
And so, like, obviously, some people don't have artistic skills. And, you know, you turn yours around, you're like, God, that looks terrible, dude. That's what that looks like. It looked like someone crafted it from memory.
Yeah, it's a real statue. Yeah. It's a real statue and a real face that the Miami Heat tried to honor Dwayne Wade.
I didn't see this. Somebody said in a speech, he said, I'm not sure who that guy is. Did he really? From the text line.
Did he actually? I mean, it's kind of a weird spot to be in.
That would be
in.
Funny.
The organization is obviously nice enough to honor you, but then
just
you clown on the statue.
I mean, I'm looking at it again. How did this get?
I think players have to start giving approval. Is what needs to happen. The player. I know you want it to be a surprise, but the player needs to see it.
Or this is going to be testing for like a movie. Should put 40 people in a room and be like, "Does this look like Dwayne Wade?" Because I can't get over how little it looks like him. Why does he look like he's like 80? What happened to the eyes? And the
memes, though, that are coming from this are very funny.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's all pretty funny, but, like, I genuinely don't understand how this happens one time a year, Gold, but it had to be discussed today. It's so bad. That bronze, what do you think that thing cost to make? Like, a couple $100,000, $100,000?
Probably.
There have been a couple good ones,
though. For a statue of that size? Yeah, some of them are great.
Like the Kobe one, I think,
was
very
Baker,
good.
Didn't Baker Mayfield just get one, and wasn't his a little weird?
Yeah. We got to avoid this with Salvador Oklahoma? Perez. Mm-hmm. When he eventually gets his statue, do right by Salvi, okay? just named the Roberto Clemente award winner.
It's a great honor today.
It's an amazing honor, Major League Baseball. He's going to have a statue in front of wherever their next stadium is.
That's right.
Do right by Salvi. That's all I'm asking for. All the people just talking about who it looks like. I mean,
Will says it's The Rock and Kevin Hart, but in one. That's what they think the statue looks like for Dwayne Wade.
I think the closest one I saw was the one that said it looked like it was the photo of like the electrodes hooked up to Lawrence Fishburne's mouth when he was like yelling in the Matrix when they're holding.
I saw that one. That was good.
I was like, that one's pretty close.
It is. I honestly thought it was fake the first time I saw it. I thought that someone was just messing around, but it is the actual statue. You can check it out if you haven't already up on Google or social media, of course. Up next, let's talk about Travis Kelce, though, and what he was able to do for this offense yesterday as he went up against what seemingly has become his favorite opponent to play as well. That's the Las Vegas Raiders.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.